Thank you to Western Washington Coalition for Life for sponsoring today's broadcast of Life Talk Northwest. Born from prayer and a promise in 2018, the WWCFL's mission is to provide encouragement and support through resources, education, and information focused on embracing the beauty and sanctity of all human life. Engage with WWCFL at wwcfl.org or on Facebook at Western Washington Coalition for Life. Thank you, WWCFL, for supporting Life Talk Northwest.
Welcome to Life Talk Northwest. I'm Dan Kennedy, former CEO of Human Life of Washington, your host. And we have another terrific guest for you on our show, Abby Johnson, who most of you are familiar with. Abby worked for Planned Parenthood for 8 years, working her way up through the ranks to become the clinic director in Bryan, Texas. In fact, she was Planned Parenthood's Employee of the Year in 2008. But she walked away from her job after witnessing the abortion of a 13-week-old fetus during an ultrasound-guided abortion. She left Planned Parenthood and instantly became a national news headline for her defection, which led to a pro-life speaking career. In 2012, she founded And Then There Were None, the only ministry in the nation that helps abortion workers leave their jobs and find new ones out of the industry. To date, she has helped over 570 abortion workers quit. That is phenomenal. She also founded Pro-Love Ministries and Loveline in the fall of 2019. Her best-selling book, Unplanned, was made into a feature film that debuted in theaters nationwide March 2019 under the same name. And she is the host of the podcast Politely Rude. I love that name. And she and her husband, Doug, have 8 children. Welcome, Abby.
Well, thank you so much for having me on.
It's been a few years since we've had you on, but I wanted you to come on to discuss your brand new book, Fierce Mercy, Daring to Live Out God's Compassion in Bold and Practical Ways. And in the book, you talk about the experience and emotions you had as you watched Unplanned, the movie about your radical pro-life conversion for the first time. Tell us what that was like to see that.
You know, it was very vulnerable for me. I had been on set, which was it's also a very interesting experience I talked about in the book. And then, watching the film for the first edited cut of the film was very interesting. It felt very surreal. I feel very naked right now because I knew that, you know, we were about to be releasing this and, you know, everybody in the world could see me in this very vulnerable position. Everybody could see me, you know, at this time where I had, you know, had an abortion and I'm, you know, laying on my bathroom floor. And even though it wasn't me, you know, it was an actress playing me, but it was still, you know, my story.
Sure.
And I just thought, this is so vulnerable. And I remember once the producers had flown down to show it to me and we had watched it at my home. And when they left, I was looking at my husband and saying, do I still have to do this? I don't want to do this anymore, you know?
Yeah.
And he was like, yeah, I mean, you have to do it. You're a little too far into the process now. But even that was just a moment of just, you know, mercy from God, just being like, you know, Abby, this isn't about you. This is,
right.
This is about these babies. This is about conversion of heart. It's not about you. And, you know, God was really helping me to see that this is so much bigger than me. And that was exactly what I needed at that moment. And, you know, this book is really just about helping people understand the mercy that God is so ready to give us every single day. I mean, I tell stories about the mercy that I've seen him give me, you know, definitely in the past 12 years because I've needed it so much. But then also, you know, helping us to see areas in our life where we can give mercy to the people that we encounter each and every day.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, I'm speaking with Abby Johnson, and we're talking about her new book, Fierce Mercy. You know, I think, you know, you said you just kind of felt naked out there. You really gave, you know, kind of gave yourself as a sacrifice, and that's really what it was. you know, for all the world to see. But you were being used as God wanted you to be used. And, you know, it's tough sometimes to remind ourselves, you know, that's what we're doing. That's what we're doing. You know, you have to kind of wonder, where is this going? Where does it go from here? How will this book, you know, given the impact of Unplanned, the book and both the movie, how will this book, how do you hope it influences the public?
Yeah, I mean, I always hope that just throughout the work I do, and particularly throughout, you know, my ministry and then There Were None, I mean, we're reaching out to abortion clinic workers. So we're reaching out to people who I believe a lot of people in the pro-life movement believe are unreachable. And, you know, a lot of people think this is just an untouchable group of people. And, you know, I talk about that a little bit in the book, starting, and then There Were None. There were people, pro-life leaders, who sort of, you know, were patting me on the head and saying, oh, that's so cute, Abby, that, you know, that you think that these people would actually leave the clinic. They're never going to leave the clinic. They're never going to have a conversion. They're never going to be pro-life. And these are people staring at me. These are people, my friends, are looking at me in the face and telling me this. And I'm saying, are you joking? I mean, you're staring at me. I was a person who worked in the abortion clinic. I am a person who now is pro-life. Like, why would you think that this couldn't happen? And they all just sort of looked at me and said, but you're different. And I'm like, no, I'm not different. In fact, I'm probably one of the worst. I was probably one of the worst. I was probably one of the most pro-abortion people in the abortion industry. I was, you know, one of the best salesmen for abortion. I mean, I won their Employee of the Year award, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
But yet, God still touched my heart in the middle of an abortion procedure, right? In the middle of that abortion clinic, he still reached down and touched my heart and turned my heart of stone into a heart of flesh. So if he can do that for me, then why can't he do that for every single person that works in the industry? Of course he can. And so, you know, I just felt like, I just hope that as people read this book, I hope that, you know, they come to the realization that truly no one is too removed from God, that they see how big our God is and how small we really are and how his hand can touch, you know, even those that are so far away from him. And then I want them to understand how they are an instrument of that mercy. And, you know, God often picks us to be that instrument. God often picks us to stand outside of those abortion clinics and, you know, to reach people who are walking in, or, you know, to give, you know, that homeless person we drive by, to give them our leftovers, right, as we're mm-hmm. going home from mm-hmm. eating dinner. Or, you know, whatever it is, whoever that vulnerable person is, whoever that marginalized person is God calling us to show that person mercy? And so I just really hope that people will read the book and then walk away feeling inspired to do more.
Boy, that certainly is a laudable goal, because one of my frustrations with decades in the pro-life movement was the very, very small minority who, you know, just lambasted women who had abortions, lambasted those who worked at abortion clinics, and it's so self-defeating for the movement, because our whole point is to bring them to understand the dignity of the human person, and you're not going to do that by yelling at them. I mean, that just drove me nuts, which is, you know, why I think, you know, it is a just an absolute miracle that, and certainly I think spirit driven that you started and then There Were None, and it's just a remarkable ministry and one that we so desperately need, because it doesn't make any difference which way the Dobbs decision goes, for example.
Right.
There's always going to be a push for abortion.
Right.
And there's always going to be, you know, here in Washington State, you know, they could. end Roe v. Wade, it would make no difference because it's codified into law in Washington State anyway, state law. So, but I think these are the people we need to reach out to, and you're doing that. If I may ask just kind of an aside here, when they contact you, that's got to be frightening for them in some way. It takes a lot of courage to, you know, say, I want to get out.
It does, and they are contacting someone who is truly unknown to them. I mean, you know, they may have been told about us. They may have been told, you know, oh, this is, you know, a group of pro-life people, and these people, you know, will help you, whatever. They may have been told that by, you know, let's say sidewalk counselors or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's just so unknown to them. And they have been told by the abortion industry, whether it's Planned Parenthood or a private company or, you know, whatever it is, they've been told by the abortion industry that pro-lifers are dangerous, that they don't care about them, that they want them to die. I mean, they've been told that, you know, they want them killed. You know, they've been told all of these crazy things about pro-lifers. And so, you know, it's no wonder that they would be, you know, sort of reticent, I guess, to, you know, call us or trust us. And so, you know, that's why it's really important. I mean, we have the most amazing intake manager who happens to be my best friend. But she's so incredible because she is so good at talking to them and helping them understand that, you know, they are loved and they are with people who have worked inside the industry too. So, you know, this really is like a tribe of people who understand them, who get them, who have been on the other side, you know, and we're here to protect them. And that's another big fear of theirs, is that they're going to leave the abortion clinic and the clinic is going to come after them. And that has happened, right? It happened with me. I mean, I left and then all of a sudden I found myself in a courtroom. And so that can happen. And so, you know, we want them to know that under all circumstances, we have attorneys to protect them, to provide legal representation for them. They don't have to fear their employer anymore because we have their back.
We're going to have to take a quick break. We're speaking with Abby Johnson. You're listening to this on Life Talk Northwest, Sacred Heart Radio. I'm Dan Kennedy, your host. And we'll have more to discuss with Abby when we come back from break.
Loving God, please grant me peace of mind and calm my troubled heart. Give me the strength and clarity of mind to find my purpose and walk the path you've laid out for me. I trust your love, God, and know that you will heal this stress, just as the sun rises each day against the dark of night. In Jesus' holy name, amen.
Welcome back to Life Talk Northwest. I'm Dan Kennedy, your host, and we're speaking with Abby Johnson. And we're talking about her new book, Fierce Mercy. And, you know, when you jumped from a career at Planned Parenthood to become a spokesperson for, you know, the pro-life movement, there had to be a lot of, well, growing pains, a lot of things you kind of learn on the journey. You know, you had this sudden change in your life. How did that work? How did you navigate all that?
Yeah, I mean, it was definitely a big jump for sure. I was really blessed though because I had so much support. I mean, I had, you know, my family support, my parents hated that I worked at Planned Parenthood, so they were really thrilled that I wasn't there anymore. You know, my husband was very supportive. He didn't like that I worked at Planned Parenthood. So, I mean, you know, I had a great support system. And then I had, you know, all of these sort of, I guess, new friends, if you will, you know, in the pro-life community. People, you know, they certainly did not have to befriend me. They had every reason to not trust me, to, you know, wonder if I was really, you know, on the up and up. Was I just trying to trick them or whatever? But they didn't. I mean, they trusted me right off the bat. I think they saw in my heart that I was really, really remorseful and, you know, really sorry for what I had done. And so they, you know, they chose to trust me and believe me. And so they were with me too, every step of the way. And these have been the people that, you know, they had prayed outside of my clinic. So they had seen the worst of me, right? They had seen me flipping them off as I went into work and yelling at them for stupid reasons, you know, and they still chose to befriend me. And, you know, they themselves showed me this incredible mercy, right? And so it was just really it was an interesting time, but I was very blessed because I had so much support. What happens a lot of times with these workers, and one of the reasons it was really important for me to start this ministry, was because a lot of the people who come to us, who come through the ministry, do not have that kind of support. You know, a lot of the women and men, but it's mostly women. Most of the women who come to us, they may not have that kind of support. Their family may have been very supportive working, you know, of them working in the clinic. You know, sometimes we have mother and daughter teams that come through the ministry, and their mom is actually the one that got them the job at the abortion clinic. So it's, you know, it's just a very different sort of experience. I mean, you just never know what that person's experience is. About 70% of the women that come through our ministry have had abortions themselves, which is not, you know, surprising.
Right.
So they're having to heal from that as well. Not only healing from, you know, yes, what they've done in the clinic, but they're also having to heal from their own abortions too. So it's just, it's a big, you know, it's a lot of healing they have to go through. But I think we as a movement, you know, we have been doing better. But I think there at times, there's sort of this overzealous nature of the pro-life movement where we become so focused on humanizing the baby in the womb that we dehumanize those who work in the industry.
Exactly.
We begin to dehumanize the women who are walking into the clinic. And we don't want to ever do the same thing to the abortion clinic worker that we are accusing them of doing to the baby. We don't ever want to fall into that cycle of dehumanization. And so in the book, I talk a lot about just what does that mean? What does it mean, you know, to dehumanize someone? And how do we stop? You know, once we get in that cycle, right. How do we stop? And I think that's a really important lesson that we all need to learn, including myself, because it's not just with abortion, right? This is with politics. This is with anything controversial. This is with people we disagree with on the daily, right? This is with the LGBTQ movement.
Right.
This is, you know, with anything, anybody that we find ourselves at odds, you know, find ourselves at odds with, we don't want to win that argument but lose that soul.
Right.
Because that really is what we're trying to, that's really what we're trying to win. We're not really trying to win the argument. We're trying to win that soul.
Excellent
point. And so, that's really what I talk a lot about in the book.
Well, you know, as part of the title, The Fierce Mercy, Daring to Live Out God's Compassion in Bold and Practical Ways. So you cover some of those practical ways that we, you know, don't how we respond and not dehumanize those around us. And you know, sometimes we're always, as we were discussing during the break, and as I was the one that said, yeah, sometimes we're the ones who are willing to cast the first stone. It is just, you know, just the opposite of what we're supposed to be. And I mean, just in a practical manner, let alone a spiritual manner, you know, that never works when you're trying to bring people to your side. What do you see as the impacts of the book and the title or the movie Unplanned? Have you seen things play out from that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, gosh, it was in theaters for 14 weeks. And I have to say, honestly, there wasn't, when it was in theaters, I don't think there was not a day that I woke up where I didn't have a message in my inbox from somebody saying, you know, I walked into your film a critic, I walked in pro-choice, and I walked out pro-life.
Wow.
And, you know, that was why we did it, right, was to change hearts and minds. I woke up with messages from women who said, you know, my friend brought me to this movie, I was considering an abortion, but now I'm choosing life. And so that's really the whole point of our movement, right? Really, it's to facilitate a change of heart. And, you know, whether that is the post-abortive mother, whether, you know, who's trying to find healing, whether that is the mom who's considering an abortion and she, you know, she chooses life, whether it's a dad who's pushing his girlfriend or wife to have an abortion, he changes his mind. Mm-hmm. Whether it's an abortion clinic worker who leaves her job and has a change of heart in abortion, this movement is and should be all about conversion, because that's really what Christ was about. He was about converting hearts.
Oh, absolutely. You know, in fact, it did have an impact. Even in my life, when my daughter and son-in-law were about to have their first daughter, they were looking for a name, and a name that just rang true to them was Abby. So I have a granddaughter named Abby, mm-hmm. who's almost 2 years old.
Oh. So, it's a good name. It's a good name.
It is a good name, and she is a little sweetheart. So what do you think are the? We only have about 4 minutes here. What do you think are the biggest challenges now facing the pro-life movement?
Honestly, I think my greatest fear right now is that we get the ruling that we want out of the Supreme Court, and people become complacent.
Yes.
That's my biggest fear right now. You know, when you're fighting a battle, people always get really fired up, right? People are like, yeah, you know, when you have an adversary, people are always really gung-ho.
Sure.
And they're, you know, they're fighting mad, and they you know, they've got somebody to fight. Right now, we have an adversary in the White House, so people are you know, just fighting. And we had a record year last year in 2021 of pro-life laws passed in different state houses and state legislatures. And that's amazing. But I think what happens sometimes is that, you know, when we have like, you know, our guy, quote unquote, in the White House, people are like, oh, great, I did my job. I voted. I got our pro-life guy in, and now I'm done.
Right.
And I'm very fearful that if we get what we want at the Supreme Court, you know, if Roe is overturned, that people are going to say, okay, now we don't have to worry anymore in the pro-life movement. But I think what people don't understand is that that's really when the fight begins. Because I think that if Roe is overturned, we are going to start seeing some warfare unlike we have ever seen before. In this nation, abortion is a sacrament to the left. It is not just a healthcare procedure to them. It is not just something that they want. It is truly a sacrament to them. And if we start taking that sacrament away from them, we are going to start seeing some like biblical times warfare taking place in this country. They are going to be fighting tooth and nail to kill babies. And these evil people like George Soros and Warren Buffett and Bill Gates are going to be funding, you know, campaigns mm-hmm. and statewide campaigns, gubernatorial campaigns, unlike we have ever seen before. That's really when the fight begins. And so people need to understand that they do have a place in the pro-life movement, and that place is going to really kick up into gear if we get what we want at the Supreme Court. So we cannot become apathetic and complacent right now.
Oh, absolutely. I remember reading years ago an essay about the best place to make changes in a nation is not right at the top. You know, that kind of goes back and forth and back and forth. But it's at the state levels, at the local levels, at the community levels.
Yeah.
And we see that with Soros and the prosecutors, for example, and the crime wave And I think you're absolutely right. People cannot become complacent. And we, you know, just because the court said this one way or the other, it doesn't mean people are going to not want abortions, not going to push for abortions, aren't going to be. The other side's always going to be better financed than we are.
Right.
So we're going to have to fight tooth and nail. We cannot give up. So we are almost out of time. Well, we are out of time. And I would just ask, what would you like to leave, one or two things that you'd like to leave in summing up our listeners with to think about?
Well, I would say, you know, find a place where you can get engaged in the pro-life movement if you're not already a part of the pro-life movement. There are abortion facilities all around this country. I think one of the most effective things we can do as pro-lifers is to go and pray out in front of these facilities where abortions are taking place. You know, that was a huge part of my conversion, was seeing those people out in front of my clinic each and every day. It does make a difference. It does work. So I think I encourage people to do that all the time. And find out where your local pregnancy resource center is. Get plugged in with them. Pick up a pack of diapers or baby wipes or whatever it is. Every time you go make a grocery run, drop that off at your local center. Go take a tour. Start pledging $15-$20 a month to them. You know, they have already started seeing an increase in clients all across the nation. They need people of faith, people of courage, people who believe in life to start, you know, amping up their support for them right now.
Absolutely. Well, Abby, it has been a delight and a blessing for our audience to have you here. May you continue to bless the world with your ministries. And, you know, I want to thank you for being here. Maybe we can have you back after the Supreme Court decides one way or the other, and we can talk about it then. Thank you for being here, Abby.
Yes, I love that. Thank you so much.
And I want to thank our listeners, and may your families be blessed. And thank you for listening to Life Talk Northwest on Sacred Heart Radio.
Thank you to Western Washington Coalition for Life for sponsoring today's broadcast of Life Talk Northwest. Born from prayer and a promise in 2018, the WWCFL's mission is to provide encouragement and support through resources, education, and information focused on embracing the beauty and sanctity of all human life. Engage with WWCFL at wwcfl.org or on Facebook at Western Washington Coalition for Life. Thank you, WWCFL, for supporting Life Talk Northwest.